The following audio content is a talk from Convergence, a service for young adults at University Presbyterian Church in Seattle, Washington. For more information, please visit our website at upc.org/young-adults.
If you're new, glad you're here. Don't worry about this. You will be able to pick up right away on what we're going to be talking about. You don't have to have been here through the whole series, but we have been in a series, and this series is called Get Your Boots On, and I'm going to ask if somebody could put out that fire in the back right there. Yeah, light the fire. It happens here. It'd be great. Any firemen in the room? Yay! That was awesome. Okay, well, that's a good indication of how it's going to go tonight. So, not sure what that means. But anyways, hey, listen. So we've been in this series and on Get Your Boots On, the idea is to think about kind of how do we engage our faith. And some of you probably want, you know, we picked this picture and some of you probably wonder what the heck. Obviously, you know, it's just probably as simple as, hey, I saw a picture with a boot getting on. I don't know. But what's going on with this? If some of you are, maybe some of you don't pay attention to the newsletter, I would encourage you to do so. We have a guy who actually puts it together. His name is Roar. He's hilarious. And he decided he wanted to kind of throw his own and sort of interpretations on what the heck is going on in this picture with the series. His last one was this. This is actually what it looks like at Thanksgiving at my house. All my relatives and I dress up in red and we watch Grandpappy put on his boots. Then we realize two white doves. That's one interpretation, right? Not sure that that's exactly it. Maybe you have family traditions like that. They get weird, I know. Maybe this is sort of a Cinderella story, kind of a modern day Cinderella story of some guy putting on the magic boot. He's going to find his true love or something. I don't know. He also said, maybe what's going on in here is that, you know, we talked about opposition and struggle kind of one week. And he said, well, really, there's nothing worse than trying to put on a pair of boots that are just too small. Right? I don't know. Maybe that's what's going on. But we've been looking at this, and what the heck is happening here, right? Well, I picked this because it was painted by a guy named Matt Whitney. He's part of the wider UPC community here, and he actually had a. It was inspired for him by a psalm, and the psalm was Psalm 96, where the psalmist or the ancient songwriter actually said this. Let's see if we can get it come up here. Ooh, look at that. One little bit at a time. So sing to the Lord a new song. Sing to the Lord all the earth. Pause. Dramatic. Sing to the Lord. Praise his name. Proclaim his salvation day after day. Declare his glory among the nations, his marvelous deeds among the peoples. For great is the Lord and most worthy of praise. Ascribe to the Lord, O families of nations. Ascribe to the Lord glory and strength. Ascribe to the Lord glory due his name. Now, ascribe is this. It's this word that just means give credit. Give credit where credit's due. And that part of what it means to be a follower of God is that we get to give credit. We see where God is at work and we give him credit where credit is due. That we've been exploring then what that looks like. Peter, he talks about in a letter to some churches long ago in 1 Peter, he says, you know, you are a chosen people. I mean, you're a motley crew. He's writing to a group of people who have kind of come around Jesus. They're coming from all different places. And a lot of them are slaves and people who wouldn't necessarily look like they have a lot going in their life. But he says, you are chosen people. You are a royal priesthood. You have been called out of darkness. And your job is, in a sense, is to begin to declare the praises of God. That you were once a people who had not received mercy, but now you are a people who have received mercy. And your job is to declare that. And so what we've been looking at, and for some of us, we might be kind of reviewing stuff. For maybe some of us, we're not really sure about Christian faith. And if that's you, or if you're at a place where you're like, ah, man, I've tried it, and I'm tired of it, but I'm going to come back and I'm going to give it another try. What we've been trying to look at is how can we think maybe anew together? What does it mean to be the people of God? What does it look like for us? I mean, what is it really about? There's all kinds of ideas on what it means to be a Christian, and some of them are true and some of them maybe not so true. But we wanted to figure out that somehow what it means to be a Christian is to be part of a people. And it also means to be part of a people who are going somewhere, people who were rescued on one hand, or called, maybe called forward in a more positive way to say it, but also people then who are about kind of giving credit or looking to where God is at work, this God that has been powerful, who has been loving, who has saved, in a sense, people, and to begin to join him in that. And so that's what we've been doing. We've been looking at that. And so there's really two different kind of things we've been pushing into. And we broke up the series in two ways. And the first was this: is let's go back and kind of look at what is Jesus actually doing when he's calling. So some of us have ideas on what it means to be a Christian or what it means to follow Jesus. Well, let's remind ourselves, or maybe let's challenge our thinking by looking at these early stories of the first disciples, the very first disciples, what they're called to figure out what are we called from? I mean, that's part of it. There has to be some sort of genesis. There's something that we're called from or called to. So let's look at that. And then we looked at Nehemiah and said, here's an example, a person in the Old Testament who actually kind of went from an inner conviction to actually doing something with his life and joining with a whole group of people to make a difference in the world in which he lived. So I'm just going to run through these real quick, and then we're going to have time for us to actually kind of dialogue around this. And some of you, you've seen that sheet. Really what we did is just, for some of you, you can look at it, maybe get kind of caught up. It's a little cryptic, but for some of us, you might just kind of look at it. It might jog your memory. I mean, we've been going for a number of weeks. It might jog your memory on the things that we talked about, you know, way back when in September. So you can use that tonight, or maybe if you want to go back and maybe kind of look at something again, there'd be some questions that go along with that you could do for your own study. But first thing, we started out and we saw that Jesus comes on the scene, and whatever Jesus was about, he was about this thing called the kingdom, because his message was really simple. Turn, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. And what he's saying is God's power, authority, forgiveness, grace. God's real presence is actually not far away. It's not in a distant time or in a distant place. It's actually right here. So change direction. Live into that. And then we saw, as we went through these kind of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the different Gospels, a number of things came out. And these don't match exactly to what you see on your sheet, but here's kind of some highlights from what we talked about, that Jesus has called all of us to follow him, not because we've impressed him or we deserve it, but simply because of his grace. That being said, not because we are impressive to him. In other words, we have a lot to bring him. He grabbed people who society would say didn't have a lot to offer. But more than that is that not only we don't deserve it. In other words, we're not such a good person that Jesus goes, well, you can be a Christian because you're just spotless. He wrestled with some of his disciples on that. But it's simply because of his grace. He says, I want you to come and follow me, not because of what you've done, but simply because of my grace. You don't deserve it. This is not about you being perfect or living up to some sort of standard. This is simply me saying, I want you to come and follow me. And he goes on, we see Jesus calls us to follow him as a participant in his love for the world. That when we are called to be a Christ follower or a Christian, what it means is that we are not called to sort of sign on the dotted line and kind of get in. But Jesus says, look, I want to extend God's love, the love of that I call God my Father. It's this intimate relationship. And I want the world to know that God loves this world. And I actually want you to be a part of that. I don't want you to sort of sit back and think, well, this is sort of for the people that are hyper-spiritual or really, really good. No, I want you to be a part of, in some way. For some of us, it might seem large. Some of us might seem small. But each of us are called to be followers. He used the term fishers of men with disciples. He said, I want you to reconceive what you're about. I want you to be part of sharing God's love with the world around you in a number of ways. Third, he called us to follow him not just as Lord of someday, but as master of this day. In other words, this is not about sort of saying, well, God, yeah, God out there sort of is Lord or King or whatever term you want to call him. But he says, you know what? I want you to know that I want to be master. I want to be the one that can help steer you. The word is captain that was used in the original language. I want you to know that I can help you steer through the things that are going on, not just kind of far off, or not just at church, or not just in your Christian circles, but right now, I know more about what is going on in your life, your vocation, your area of study, your challenges than you do. The challenge is, will you allow me to guide you? Because if you do, you're going to see something that you would never see on your own. You're going to see my power, truth, grace at work in your life and the lives of those around you in ways that you would never see if you continue to sort of guide your own trajectory. Well, last is this, that on a life, that we are called to follow him on a lifelong journey of transformation from present reality into future glory, which is to say this, that each and every day that are continuing to follow Jesus, learn from him, have his power and grace and forgiveness go into our lives is not a one-time decision, but it is something that we do each and every day of our lives. And he begins to do things in us that we would never be able to do on our own. That he looks at us and he says, I'm going to give you a new name. I see your potential. I see what you're going to be like, not what you are right now. I don't listen to the names that you call yourself, the names that those around you might ascribe to you. Loser. Nerd. Whatever it is, a rejected one, forgotten one, abandoned one, not capable of anything. I see what you're going to be, and I'm going to begin to take you each step of the way, if you follow me, into what I have created you to be, your potential. Well, so we have to look at sort of what's the very basis, but then we look at Nehemiah. Nehemiah is about this, okay, what does it mean to take sort of maybe what God has done in my life, or is doing in my personal life, and what does it mean to do that as a community, and also to be able to move out in a way in which we can see, which we can enjoy God in his cosmic vision. That God is not just interested in what is going on kind of individually for us, but he wants to see all of creation. This entire world he created. He created it good, and he wants us to join him in his redemptive work. In other words, his restoring work of this world. So we looked at Nehemiah as Nehemiah tried to figure out his particular place. Because sometimes we can hear, well, let's go save the world. And that can be exciting, and we hear that a lot today. But it also can be exhausting, can it not? It can be overwhelming. And we end up feeling like, we end up feeling totally burdened down by it. And yet we hear again and again, you can change the world, you can change the world, you can change the world. Well, part of the problem is because it's focused. We've bought the lie that a life best live is a life of individuality, is a life of personal freedom, that's the highest. And that there's no way that we can live into even what God has called us to do. We can't even live into faith alone. Some of you know what that's like. It's just exhausting to try to do this on your own all the time. You need people to walk along with you. And so Nehemiah kind of helps guide us in that. The first thing we see is that he began to kind of go from a cosmic vision of things that are in this world that you go are just not right. And he begins to whittle it down by there's a particular thing that breaks his heart. And that's for us. We're not called to save the world. We're not called to serve in every capacity that somebody says, hey, you should come and serve with me. God never calls us to do that. It's a recipe for burnout. God has called you into particular places for particular times. He says, where is it that your heart breaks? And Nehemiah has his heart break over the distress that he hears in his home city of Jerusalem. And then he prays about it and what his role might be in it. So he begins to narrow it. Then he waited, he prayed, and he took risks. And as he did that, he began to see that God gave him the words to say, that God gave him particular favor, that God even, as he began to be real specific, I think if I'm going to be able to move forward on this conviction, this thing I have in my life, I'm going to need a couple of things. And he gets real specific. And as he asks for them, God provides them in ways that he maybe never would have thought that God could do. He has a sense of, okay, not only is things getting whittled down, but I actually know that it's not just me alone. Actually, God is at work in my life. Then he goes on and he realizes that I cannot build this wall. And the wall, this huge wall, was something that he was called to be built around the city, because if he can build a wall around the city of Jerusalem, life can flourish with inside the city. But he can't go it alone, so he learned to walk with a community and engage a community around him. And same for us. We cannot walk alone. Even with our own individual faith, we cannot walk alone. We need people to come alongside of us. But some of us are just not very good at doing anything but kind of being on our own. And so the insight that Nehemiah has as he begins to engage a community around him is as important for us in taking on a huge project as it is for us in just developing healthy friendships and community. We looked at that. Not only does he gather a huge community, but what is true is that we are going to hit opposition. That if we begin to walk down a particular path and we can think that path is good and true and beautiful, and it should be a blessing to everybody. As we pursue truth, that truth will actually threaten some people, because some people, maybe even there are parts of our own lives where we realize that there's a lie that lives that we get really comfortable with. If we expose the truth, somebody's going to be uncomfortable, that there are vested interests, that we might free, we might bring freedom to one particular area of life, but there are others for whom they're making money off of that. The fact that people aren't free. Part of what we talked about, the Bible talks about, we have an enemy who does not want us to live in truth, who does not want us to live in freedom, and he'll do anything he can to stop us. And so we looked at opposition. Because the one thing that we are going to get challenged with through our whole life is to kind of, as we get called with God to walk down a certain path, and this might even just be a path on, God, I want to know more of who you are. We are going to get challenged to either give up on it or to get frustrated and turn off and get bitter and get in fights. And so how do we stay on the path? And then lastly, we looked at how, Sarah talked about how he faced sin that happened within his own community. He was building up walls, great big thing, but there was actually stuff that was going on in his own community in which love was not being made manifest. One of the things that we want to look at is that in Nehemiah 7:4, we read this. So the wall is built, the project seems complete, but we read this, that now the city was large and spacious, but there were few people in it, and the houses had not yet been rebuilt. Some of you know, I went to Furwood, and I love Furwood. Furwood's a camp up in Bellingham. They have a phenomenal location. They have buildings. They have these great cabins. They have ski boats. They have sailboats. It is a great place. And there's a bunch of people who have done a lot of work in building structures to make sure that kids that don't have money can be there. But as great as that is, and there's all kinds of organizational stuff that happens around Furwood, that's great. But we all know that that's just a nice piece of property until there becomes a common life that comes around it. That you get these ridiculous kids that come out and they're idiots for a week, and they have a great time and they laugh a lot, and you end up spending a summer in which you're crying a lot sometimes. You're pushed to your very limits at times. You see God heal people. You see God free people. That really, what we need to, if we're going to kind of push into something, it's not kind of these bigger structures that are out there. We can sort of change society, but we could change sort of the way our cities look or change laws, but it's about a common life of people who come around God for a common purpose. That brings real life, and that's what makes Camp Furwood. Nobody thinks about the property. They think about the experiences that they have with the people. So for tonight, for us, you've been talked at a lot. You've heard a lot, but what does it mean for us to think about being a people who can now have a common life in which God is at the center? That part of what was going on there is that people would look at the nation of Israel, and for Nehemiah, it broke his heart that the nations were going, oh man, Israel. They weren't impressed. They were mocking it, and it's not because they didn't have a big enough castle or big enough walls or a big enough temple. It's that it seemed like God's life was nowhere to be found. And if there was a role for Israel, it was not to be the richest or most powerful. It was to demonstrate a life of a people that come around God in which God's character began to be made visible. We talk about this in the New Testament, is what is it like for the Spirit of God to control our life, and things like love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, gentleness, self-control begin to rule our actions, how we interact with the world, how we interact with one another. So that's what we're going to spend some time talking about tonight. So I have a number of questions, and we're going to open it up for around 20 minutes or 15, 20 minutes or so. And you can make sure you get people's names if you haven't gotten each other's names yet, or if somebody's just joined me. But here's a couple of questions. And here's what I would encourage us to do. You guys right here, you guys just start with question one, okay? You can move to the other questions if you like, but just start with question one. For you guys right here to go with question two, okay? And then for you guys can kind of divide up how you want. To do question three, and then hopefully you'll all get to question four. Let me run through these real quick. Okay, question one, what does it mean to follow Jesus? What do we tend to focus on? What do we tend to forget? And this is for you, if you are kind of brand new to faith, this is just for you to be able to share. Here's what I interact with. Here's what my friends think on what it means to be a Christian. Maybe you want to interact with some of the material that we've talked about. Maybe this is just a time for us to talk as a community. What does it mean, actually, to follow Jesus? What do we tend to forget? What do we focus on? Okay, question two is this. What is wrong that you would like to see put right? Which is part of saying, when you look out in the world, most of us would look out in the world and go, this world is not perfect. There are things that are broken in it. There are things that could be made right. And this could be, you might look out and you go, you know, there are places where I know that truth is not being told. Man, it breaks my heart. You might look out and you go, there are people who don't have enough to eat. That's something that's wrong. I would love to see that put right. There might be those that you go, you know what's wrong is I look out and I see that people don't know the love of God that I know. I wish that could be put right. I wish they could know the forgiveness that I know. I wish that perhaps that you look at and you go, you know what's really wrong is the isolation. People are lonely. I just look at people who just feel so alone. I wish they knew that they didn't have to be alone. Talk about kind of what is it you look out as you look into this world, what do you long to see put right? And then over here, if you guys would start with this, you know, what are the challenges and barriers that you see to faith? You know, whether for you or for your friends, when you look out, what are the things that seem to get in the way? And it could be everything from it just feels like it's too much to do alone. It could be, you could say, hey, you know what, for me, I just feel like it's just too big, or I don't know how to find my particular place in it. Or you might feel, just kind of go, I feel some specific opposition. It might be really hard. I got friends. It's just difficult to be able to talk to them about this. I got family. Some of us are going to go back into families that might be really difficult. So what's the as you see, barriers and challenges to faith? And then what have you done about it? What can you do about it? To not just stay stuck, but to begin to move forward, okay? And then the fourth one is simply this. Some of you might have experienced, hey, here's an idea on how we can kind of move forward as a community, or here's something that God's laid on my heart that to join God. It might be things you've done. It might be ideas that you have. Just share those. That'll be encouraging. Okay? I want to give you a pass. If you feel like, hey, I just want to listen, you can just say, hey, pass. And that's totally fine. But I want to challenge you at some level to think about how can you kind of make a little bit of a risk to begin to share with a group of people some of these questions on stuff that matters as we begin to explore faith together. Because as we do it together, that we're going to get a fuller picture, that we're going to realize perhaps that we need to get challenged in some areas, but maybe that there's more going on than we thought. And we might actually have our eyes open to some pretty cool opportunities. All right? Go for it. I'll call you back in about 20 minutes.